I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Strong opening to the second half of the 2019 season last night up in Philadelphia. 4-0 winners over the Phillies. Steven Strasburg, 6 scoreless innings. The bullpen went 3 scoreless as well. Wander Suero, Fernando Rodney, and Sean Doolittle wrapping up that victory. And the Nationals up to 6 games over 500 now. Still 6 games back of the Braves in the division, but now with that win over the Phillies, they are a game and a half clear for the top wild card spot in the National League. It is just remarkable what this team has done, the turnarounds that they have put together over the last couple months. From the second worst record in the National League to now the third best record in the NL. 48-42, 2 games left against the Phillies and a day off. 2 games in Baltimore against an Orioles team that has the worst record in Major League Baseball. And then off to Atlanta for 4 enormous games down at SunTrust Park. We knew this would be a big road trip coming out of the break. And as I said, Nationals got off to a good start last night. Got a lot of good stuff coming for you on our Nets Insider Show today. Be joined by Matt Gelb, covers the Phillies for The Athletic. Talk to Mark Bowman, who covers the Braves a couple weeks ago, to get a sense of how that team was shaping up as we got deeper into the season. And I wanted to talk some Phillies as well, not just because the Nationals were facing them, but because they're a really interesting team. I mean, they got off to a tremendous start to the year and then have absolutely fallen on their faces. So talk to Matt Gelb about what he feels like the Phillies' chances are in the division, how he assesses the National League East in general. And he's been high on the Nats since day one. So we'll get his take on the division overall. And then I'll be joined by Danny Rouillet. You know his voice well, co-host of the Grant and Danny Show weekdays here on 106.7 from 10 to 2. And he and I got into a little conversation on Twitter a few days ago about the composition of the baseball this year, about the rise in home runs this year. And I thought it was a really interesting discussion, and I wanted to continue it in much more length. So we'll continue that conversation with Danny Rouillet a little bit later on our Nats Insider Show as well. Some news coming out of the break involves Max Scherzer. Did not participate in the All-Star game because he was dealing with some back stiffness that he said he felt out of his start up in Detroit now 2 starts ago. Made his start against the Royals and looked totally fine. But because of that back stiffness, which was lingering, he opted not to participate in the Midsummer Classic. And then the stiffness kind of maintained. He told reporters in Philadelphia yesterday that he tried to throw out in Cleveland just to get in a normal pre-start routine, and his back wasn't really allowing him to do so. So the Nationals sent Max to get an MRI. It came back clean, and Max reassuring reporters after last night's game that this is not something that he feels is in any way serious, but he will not be pitching in this Philly series. The Nationals have opted to bump him back a couple days at least. He feels that he'll be able to pitch in Baltimore, either Tuesday or Wednesday. And if he pitches Tuesday, that would leave him online, if the Nationals keep their rotation in order, to pitch the series finale in Atlanta, which obviously you would like to have happen if you're the Washington Nationals. So we'll monitor Scherzer's back over the next couple days, see how he comes through. Needs to throw a bullpen session prior to a possible start in Baltimore. And he believes that some anti-inflammatories will knock out the discomfort. He'll be good to go. But it will be Patrick Corbin today in Philly. It'll be a Fox televised game, so we will not have it for you on Masson. but you can still listen, of course, right here on 106.7 The Fan. Be Charlie Slows and Pete Medhurst filling in for Dave Jagler, who's doing the TV broadcast this series. And then it'll probably be Aníbal Sánchez tomorrow in the series finale. Phillies will be going with Aaron Nola today and Jake Arrieta tomorrow, who's going to pitch through some bone spurs in his elbow. I'll talk to Matt Gelb about that a little later. That seems like an interesting decision for the Phillies to make, given that Arrieta really has not looked like himself over his last couple starts. So that's how things are lined up for the remainder of what will be a big series in Philadelphia. Coming up on Tuesday, July 23rd, watch your Nats take on the visiting Colorado Rockies at 7:05 and take home a Nationals water bottle presented by Masson. Visit nationals.com/tickets to scoop up a ticket to that ballgame and a Nationals water bottle. And then a day prior to that, join everybody at Nationals Park on Monday, July 22nd for Scotch and Baseball. The purchase of a special ticket, receive access to an exclusive pregame scotch tasting with up to 12 samples, snacks, and a discounted game ticket to watch the Nats and Rockies at 7:05. Specialty scotch cocktails will be available for purchase at the private scotch bar. To get your scotch and baseball ticket, visit nationals.com/scotch. Take a quick break on Nats Insider. More coming at you right after this. Welcome back to Nats Insider. Dan Colco here with you on a sunny Saturday afternoon. You never know how a team is going to come out of the All-Star break, especially a team that was red hot going into the break. But positive news for sure for the Nationals last night in Philly. I was talking with Bo Porter during last night's game, and we were kind of hearing the same thing from Michael Morse on the TV broadcast as well, filling in for FP Santangelo, doing the color commentary in Philadelphia. And they were both kind of saying that as a player, it takes you a little bit to get back into the flow of things. It sounds kind of crazy. It's only 4 days off. Why would it take, you know, that much time to adjust back to game speed or just the flow of a schedule? But they both said that it does take time, and that Bo made the point that teams go through a heavy workout before game one of the second half, just to try and get their bodies back into the flow a little bit. And I think it was good to see that from a defensive standpoint, the Nationals were still sharp. They made a couple really impressive plays. Trey Turner, Brian Dozier on the infield, and then Juan Soto up against the wall in left field made a really nice catch. That offensively, they were able to square some balls up, get enough done to scratch four runs across and pick up a win. Bullpen-wise, obviously rest for Sean Doolittle was paramount going into the break. And Davey Martinez said last night that even though the Nationals tacked on an insurance run in the top half of the ninth, making it a non-save situation, he left no questions, at least in his own head, about whether Sean Doolittle was the right guy in a four-run lead in Philadelphia, saying, in this ballpark, meaning Citizens Bank Park, a four-run lead is not as significant as it might be in other places. And he wanted to shut the door. Sean had already gotten hot in the eighth inning. He's already loose. Davey's mindset was, if the Phillies get a runner or two on against Javi Guerra, then Doolittle's going to have to get up again anyway. So why not just bring him in, shut the door? And Sean did that. And his fastball looked like it had life. Good signs there. And a good sign as well for Steven Strasburg, who wins his 11th game of the season last night. ERA drops to 3.46, which is the lowest mark that it's been since the end of May. Got hit around a little bit at Nationals Park in his first start of June against the White Sox, which bumped his ERA up a bit. But he's been pitching well of late. Six scoreless innings. And after last night's game, he acknowledged to reporters that it's always tricky for him coming out of the All-Star break just because it throws off your routine. Starting pitchers are such creatures of habit. The first day after they start, they have a schedule of how they go about things. The second day, the third day, some of them throw a bullpen the second day after, some of them throw it the third day after. But regardless, it's a routine that's been finely tuned and is specific to each guy. Steven Strasburg had, 9 days off going into yesterday's start. That's not something that pitchers are used to. And he clearly didn't feel like his stuff was especially sharp. He talked about how his curveball wasn't where he wanted it. But hey, this is still a good Phillies lineup, regardless of all the issues that they have right now. And Steven Strasburg went 6 scoreless innings. Struck out 6, walked just 1. Got himself into a few jams and got that pitch count up early in the game. And he needed 111 pitches to get through those 6 innings. Which now, by the way, marks the 3rd straight time that he's gone over the 110 pitch mark. His last 3 outings. So Steven clearly wasn't feeling like he had his best stuff last night. But can't really scoff at 6 scoreless in that ballpark against that Phillies lineup. So good signs all around for the Nationals coming out of the break. And they'll look to Patrick Corbin to keep the good times rolling. They could win a 5th straight series if they win tonight in Philadelphia or tomorrow afternoon at CBP. Fun to watch this team play of late, that's for sure. Grateful Dead Night is coming to the ballpark. The inaugural Grateful Dead Night will be Tuesday, August 13th, with the purchase of a special ticket. Get a limited edition Nat's Grateful Dead co-branded hat. Check out the live tribute band at the Budweiser Terrace before the real show begins when the Nats take on the Reds at 7:05. For more information and to get your special ticket, visit nationals.com/gratefuldead. Coming up after the break on Nats Insider, talk to Matt Gelb, covers the Phillies. They are a fascinating ball club. A lot going on with them right now, not a whole lot of it positive. So we'll talk to Matt about everything going on with the Phillies, how he assesses the Nationals' chances in the division, and what he makes of the NL East in general. Have that for you right after this. Welcome back to Nats Insider here on 106.7 The Fan. Joined now by my buddy Matt Gelb, who covers the Phillies. Matt, how you doing, man?
Pretty good. Just trying to figure out how this is all going to go for the Phillies. It's an interesting time.
No doubt, and that's why I wanted to have you on, not just because the Nationals and Phils are in the middle of this 3-game set, but also just because it's a fascinating division to me. I think going into the year, at least I expected it to be maybe 3, possibly even 4 powerhouse teams really duking it out, going head-to-head the entire season. And it really hasn't worked out that way, largely because the Nats in the early part of the season and the Phillies more lately have disappointed. And I wanted to just kind of get your take on the state of the Phillies as we get into the second half. They had a pretty complicated first half of the season, it seemed like.
Yeah, I would say the current state is confusion, really. I think, they were confused about underperformances from guys like Bryce Harper and Gene Segura and JT Realmuto in the first half. I mean, they went out and acquired, a right fielder, a shortstop, and a catcher, all who are former All-Stars, all in the primes of their careers. And, they got mostly good, not great performances from those guys. And at times they were even worse than good. So I think there's a lot of confusion about that. I think there's some confusion about the regression they've seen in their pitching staff as a whole. They've allowed more home runs than any team in the league, and it's by a lot. And this was an area that they chose not to address in the off season, believing that they wanted to see, what they had, and they figured that they could make an upgrade, come July time. And now here we are, and the pitching market isn't their most robust area right now. I mean, I think there's going to be more demand than there is supply for pitchers, especially starting pitchers, given the way the game is trending and the pitchers that are available. So there's a lot of confusion. I mean, this is a team that is better than the one that has played, especially the one that's played in the last 6 weeks or so. They're not out of it, and I think their approach at the trade deadline is going to be really interesting. Will they go for a big swing, or will they kind of make these incremental improvements on the sides? And it's kind of it's a similar position that the Nationals are in. I guess just the difference is the Phillies, made some significant investments, in the last 6 months.
Yeah, Matt, and one investment they made a year and a half ago was Jake Arrieta, and the Nationals were in on him. They were
really considering making him a strong offer and opted not to go to the level that the Phillies did. Arrieta's now in year two of this contract, and you guys just found out, you know, leading into the All-Star break that he's dealing with some bone spurs in his elbow. And I guess, you know, the latest is that the Phillies are still planning on having him pitch in this series against the Nationals. This is a guy that, to me, is going to be an enormous factor in where they end up going from here the rest of this season. What's your take on Arrieta as he stands right now and on the organization's decision to have him continue to pitch when he's clearly not 100%?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the first time a guy is going to try to pitch through, you know, bone spurs or bone chips in the elbow, and we've seen usually how these things go. I mean, usually they try it for a few starts, and it just doesn't work. I mean, you know, he's going to need surgery regardless. Like, the question now is, can he, you know, get through the rest of the season and have the surgery in the off season, or is he gonna have to need the surgery sooner rather than later? And you know, the Arrieta contract hasn't been good for them. I guess the only silver lining they have is that it is just a 3-year deal. It's not the kind of contract that was going to handcuff them for making other moves, and it certainly hasn't. I mean, they went out and added a ton of salary, so you know, it's been a disappointment. And that third year, 2020, you know, he'll be paid $20 million, and you know, it's not looking good. I mean, his strikeouts are down, his walks are up, he's allowing more home runs. He just doesn't miss as many bats as he used to, and some of that could be because of the injury he's been pitching through, but I think a lot of it is just because, you know, he's aging. And I think, you know, they had anticipated this when they signed him. I don't think they're expecting him to be an ace-level pitcher, but I think they were hoping for, you know, at the very worst, like a number three, and he has not pitched like that for much of the contract so far. And here we are, we're about a little more than halfway through the contract, and it doesn't look good right now.
Matt Galb covers the Phillies. Terrific job, and a former restaurant advisor of yours truly back in my days traveling with the Nationals in the Philly area, offered up some great recommendations over the years, so I very much appreciate that. Matt, you mentioned Bryce Harper, and you know, some Nationals fans might be following what he's doing this year in Philly. Some might be sick of talking about Bryce Harper. But as far as I'm concerned, as long as he's on a division rival and is so close geographically to this Nationals team, he's going to be a topic of conversation anytime that the Nationals and the Phillies square off. How would you assess Bryce's time in Philly thus far? The last time the Phillies came to D.C., he was employing a stance, you and I talked about it in the press box, that we have never seen from him, where he's just a lot more upright, not very spread out. It seems like he's tinkering a lot with his swing, which he's always done to an extent. But how do you assess the campaign that he's put together thus far and the impact that he's made on this organization early in his 13-year contract with them?
He's missing a lot of pitches in the zone. And I think that's been the biggest concern for both Harper and for the coaching staff. You know, like, if you look at some of the numbers, like, he's hitting the ball harder, like, on an average exit velocity level than he ever has. When he's making contact, he is hitting the ball really hard. Now, the problem is some of that hard contact is in the ground. He's hit the ball on the ground a little more, I think, than he has in the past. And then there are times where he's just not making contact. I mean, his whiff rate, you know, is the highest it's ever been in his career. And a lot of those swings and misses are pitches in the zone, and I mean, that's a pretty big concern in year one of a 13-year contract. And that's not to say that Harper isn't going to have the kind of second half that, you know, Nationals fans saw at times, where he just puts a team on his back and carries them, because he very well could. I mean, I think so far his impact in the organization, you know, what I've found is a guy who has been really, you know, willing to embrace the city as his home, and especially the people inside the organization. I think people have been, you know, really blown away with how accessible and how approachable and how down to earth he's been inside that clubhouse. But, you know, in the end, the on-field performance is going to be what matters most. And when you sign this guy to the 13-year deal, you know, you're banking on, you know, the first 3 to 4 or 5 years of that contract being the best years of the deal. So, I think that's the biggest concern for the Phillies right now, is if they just get a so-so year from Harper in the first.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Year of the deal, you know, what about the rest of it? I mean, this is an important year in terms of getting, you know, the kind of value you want to get out of a 13-year deal, and it just, you know, it's just been okay so far.
Matt Gelb covers the Phillies, joining us now on Nats Insider to give us a kind of state of the Phillies type of assessment and get a feel for how they're looking as we get deeper into the second half. Matt, it's always interesting to me to see how a team that has high hopes, high expectations placed upon them deals with struggling. And I think, you know, that's been a major key to the Nationals turning things around the way that they have, is that inside that clubhouse, as poorly as they started the season, they did not panic. They did not turn on their manager. Their manager did not turn on them. And they found a way to stick together and right the ship. I think inside the division, a little bit further north of even you guys in Philly, we've seen a team that has not reacted that same type of way to some disappointing results. What's your take on how the Phillies have handled the last few weeks going into the break when they were not playing the type of ball that they wanted to?
Yeah, I mean, they haven't handled it well. I mean, they haven't, you know, what the Nationals were able to do was pull themselves out of it. And you know, going into the season, when you look at the rosters laid out, you say, well, the Nationals, you know, probably still have the best talent of any team in this division. And usually, you know, talent rises to the top. I mean, you play out 162 games, and usually it's hard to hide, you know, a lack of talent over that 162 games. You know, the true talent will show in most cases. And I think we're seeing that with the Nationals, and we haven't seen that with the Phillies. I mean, and I don't know that there's any, you know, from where I stand and being in that clubhouse, I don't think there's any sort of negative or harmful dynamic right now between the players and the manager. I mean, I think it's simple as this. Like, the Phillies need their best players to play better. You know, Aaron Nola started to turn around in the last four starts before the All-Star break, and he's been on an incredible run, and he is one of their best players, and he has played better. So he is a guy, an example of someone who has turned it around. You know, they need more guys to do that. I mean, they need Harper and Hoskins and Realmuto and Segura. They need those guys. They are their best players. They need to play better. And the problem is for the Phillies, I think, is that, you know, the pitching staff is compromised, and I don't know if you know, if they're going to get the kind of pitching maybe that will propel them over the Nationals or the Braves. But look, this was always going to be a team that was going to be built around hitting, and they at the All-Star break were 11th in the National League in slugging percentage.
Wow.
I mean, this is a team that was built to out-hit a lot of their pitching mistakes, and going into the season, that's sort of what I expected. It just hasn't happened enough. I mean, I thought the pitching staff was going to be okay, not great, but not worse than the league, and they're not worse than the league. They're about middle of the pack, maybe lower third, but the offense just hasn't produced the way that it was designed to produce. This was a team built around offense, and they need some of these guys just to be better, and you know, the Nationals issued the same challenge to their players, and it was the pitchers, you know, I think, from where I stand, who really took that challenge to heart. You know, that starting rotation they have is incredible, and some of the other players have really stepped up, and the Phillies need that right now.
Matt, final question for you, and this is a tough question to answer. There's still so much baseball to be played, and things have ebbed and flowed significantly even to this point, and I'm sure they will continue to, but I'll ask you the question anyway. Where do you see the balance of power inside this division as we get deeper towards the stretch run regarding the Braves, regarding the Phillies that you cover, and regarding the Nationals?
This is a good one, because I have thought all along that no one was going to run away with this division. And then, of course, the Braves go on this incredible run, and I look foolish for saying that all along. I've also said all along that I think the Nationals have the best roster in the division. And I'm gonna stick with that. Like, I really do think still this division runs through the Nationals. I do, because because of that pitching. And this is such an offense-dominated game right now, but they have invested so much into those starting pitchers. And, you know, when push comes to shove, almost always, not all the time, but usually pitching will beat hitting. And the odds are in favor of the pitchers always, because of the way this game is structured. And I know the ball has made it a little more difficult for the pitchers, but I'm still going with the Nationals. And with all that said, the Braves have an incredible amount of young talent. They won the division last year. I still think the Nationals have the best team. I expect them to make a few little upgrades here and there in the next few weeks, and I think they're the team right now. I really do, but it's going to change, like you said.
It always does, and that's what makes it so fun to watch. Matt Gelb covers the Phillies. Thanks so much for the time, buddy. Look forward to seeing you down the road.
Yeah, thanks, Dan.
Stick around. More Nats Insider coming up right after the break. Welcome back to Nats Insider here on 106.7 The Fan, joined now by a familiar voice on these very radio waves, my buddy Danny Rouye, co-host of the Grant and Danny Show. You can hear every weekday from 10 to 2 here on 106.7. I should call you Radio's Danny Rouye, because you always call me Television's Dan Kolko, so we got to even it out. How you doing, buddy?
I'm great, my friend. Appreciate you having me.
Of course, my pleasure. We got into a conversation, a little back and forth on Twitter the other day, and I thought I wanted to have it kind of in full force here, because I view it as a fascinating topic throughout baseball. This is something that goes beyond the 2019 Nationals and really gets to a key issue in today's game. And, you know, both of us grew up playing baseball. You were a better player. You played into your collegiate days, and we're both very passionate about the game. So I think it's a good conversation to have, and it centers around the baseball, possible changes to it. I think there's no denying that the baseball is different now, and Rob Manfred, commissioner of baseball, has even acknowledged that there's less drag on the baseball, regardless of how that came to be. The baseball is flying differently now than it used to, which is leading to way more home runs than we used to see. There, over the All-Star break, there's a lot of time to discuss things and write about things, and there have been columns written about how the number of home runs is hurting the game of baseball, and you kind of pushed back on that idea a little bit on Twitter. Let's just dive into this by you, if you're willing, just kind of sharing your thoughts on this conversation of home runs in the game of baseball today and whether they are good or bad for the trajectory of the game going forward.
Sure, yeah. I mean, as you said, it's multifaceted and it's complicated. But it is the All-Star break, and at the All-Star game, do we have the singles derby, the doubles derby, the running from home to first, the bunt derby? No, we have the home run derby, and everybody loves it. It's fun, right? And home runs themselves are fun. The thing that I kind of pushed back on, as you alluded to, was the idea that now columnists and people that I respect, by the way, in and around the game, are you know, clutching their pearls about the number of home runs that are being hit. Yes, we're going to set a record this year in Major League Baseball, on pace for more than 6,600, previous record 6,100. So we're going to supersede it by a pretty significant amount in baseball terms. And I know numbers in baseball, it's hallowed ground, and we don't want to mess with too much, but I think of it this way. We're griping about something that still happens less than 1.4 times per game. Right? Even though that's a record pace up from, you know, whether it was 1.1 or 1.2 in previous times, but it's still something that happens less than twice a game. The home runs themselves, to me, Dan, are not a problem. I can't get behind that being the main issue. The main issue, so to speak, to me, is something I think you kind of touched on, and we can kind of go back and forth on that, what to do about it, but different eras in the sport are inevitable. Right? I mean, we've been through the steroid, performance-enhancing drug era. We've been through the era of the pitcher, and small adjustments and tweaks were made to even things out, and we've, you know, kind of undulated back and forth and gone up and down as history's properly dictated. So to me, this all-or-nothing approach that leads to one of the three true outcomes, the strikeout, the walk, or the home run, is an inevitable response to the fact that everybody throws harder than they used to. Average fastball velocity is higher than it's ever been. You go across the board now, what used to be a soft tossing lefty is now a lefty that throws 96, just like the middle reliever that throws 96, the closer that throws 99, and starting pitching isn't about craft anymore for the most part. Guys like Anibal Sanchez stand out like a sore thumb. Everybody else is throwing mid to upper 90s. Even guys that aren't very good with bad ERAs are doing that. So, to me, this hitter approach is an inevitable response to that. I can't fault hitters. I can't fault organizations. I can't fault the players in general for saying, hey, this is the best way to do it now. You want to put together three hits to score a run against guys with this kind of stuff, even pitchers that aren't quote-unquote good anymore. Good luck doing that. This all-or-nothing approach to me is kind of inevitable, and trying to legislate the home run part out of it, to me, is crazy because you're still left with strikeouts and walks, which aren't very exciting. I think we can usually agree to that, unless, of course, it's Max Scherzer going for 20 strikeouts or, you know, some other kind of record in that way. But for the most part, you know, a walk or a strikeout where the ball's not in play is what we're trying to avoid, not the home run as, you know, one of the more exciting plays in the sport. I guess that's my 30,000-foot view.
Yeah, and I don't disagree with some of what you're saying in there, Danny. I will kind of disagree with the idea that a home run is the only way to, or maybe not the only way, but the desired way to try and score runs or combat velocity. I think that the number of home runs that we're seeing is a result of players trying to hit home runs and launch angle and these uppercut swings, whereas the slap hitter, the guy who is more of a speedster, who's going to put the bat on the ball more consistently, is kind of being phased out of the game to an extent. Or even guys who used to have that type of an approach have now adjusted that approach to try and hit 20, 25 home runs a year. Whereas I think if the idea or the goal is not to hit as many home runs as you can in a game to try and win the game, then you would get fewer strikeouts and you would get fewer walks because guys would be more focused on putting the ball in play and they would be more focused on... I mean, the two-strike approach, Danny, is essentially gone in today's baseball game.
Well, it's really the dinosaur. You're right, yes.
So if we have... I think that the idea that adjusting the baseball to lead to fewer home runs and guys knowing that an exit velocity of 95 is going to result in a lesser percentage that ball will leave the yard than it does currently, would force players to try and put the ball in play more or reach base in other ways, which would then lead to more excitement in terms of more base runners and more guys going first to third, and the Nationals scoring a couple runs like they did that last game before the All-Star break when, you know, Bob Henley is making two really tough decisions on do I wave a guy, and Adam Eaton scores from first on a double in dramatic fashion, and Juan Soto scores from first on a double in dramatic fashion. And those are wow plays. Those are plays that get fans up out of their seat. I think if we have fewer balls that are leaving the yard, then it will lead to guys trying to get on base other ways and help their team in other ways, because swinging for the fences will not be as successful of an outcome if the ball is adjusted, if that makes sense.
It makes perfect sense. And in an ideal world, I'm with you, but I don't think we live in that. We live in a place where, again, I think pitcher stuff isn't going anywhere because of how guys are coached and training methods and the like. So I point to a few years ago where we're going, how the hell do we get more runs? What do we do? What do we do? How do we find a way to generate more? And the hope that you were talking about, I feel like, Dan, it was in existence there, right? Where you would go, well, the pitchers are so nasty, they're so good, but the ball in play is the most is the thing we need to emphasize, and then hitting and running, and bunting and decision making, and going first to third, and scoring from second, and reading the outfielders, and all those other kind of things that people that watch and love this game enjoy so much, that wasn't there. More runs are being scored now doing it this way. So I think I understand that in an ideal world we could have it both, right? We could have guys that really truly are home run hitters hitting home runs. It just doesn't sit right when a guy that's never hit more than nine, like Ketel Marte, is at the All-Star break with 20. That was rarefied air reserved for Ken Griffey Jr. on his way to hitting 45, you know? But now it's far more commonplace. I understand that it it doesn't sit as well with some folks that it's, you know, sort of universal and ubiquitous. But I just think that again, I keep going back to this part. I think pitching is too good. I think stuff is too good to reward that approach that you're talking about. Again, I'd love to see more Wade Boggs. I'd love to see more Tony Gwynn who can you know, scoff at a pitch just off the zone and, you know, hit a ball between that 5-6 hole. Well, now you've also got to worry about shifts. Now you got to worry about, you know, the scouting reports and a million other things that maybe those guys didn't have to at such an advanced time in the 80s and 90s when we were growing up. But I understand your want. I want it too. I just don't know that it's possible without kind of dramatic changes to pitching. And then maybe, you know, that the baseball's deadened again, so to speak. We're assuming that it's live. We both don't buy the excuses that are being made. I think they have made a change to the baseball. But they made it so that runs went up because runs were down with everything in place that you kind of wanted to cause the effect that we're getting now, if that made sense. I know that was very confusing. I hurt my own head just saying that.
No, it's a complex conversation. Danny Rie from the Grant and Danny Show joining me here on Nats Insider. And Dan, it is a complex conversation to have, for sure. And we could, you know, you and I could sit down over a cup of cold beverages and have this conversation for 2.5 hours, I'm sure. And maybe we get the opportunity to do that one day. I would enjoy that. But Danny, I think I want to go back to something that you made, a point that you made on Twitter in regards to this conversation, which is that the idea of a home run being an exciting play in Major League Baseball is still very much the case for you. And it certainly is. It's more exciting than a strikeout. It's more exciting than a rollover 6-3 ground ball, any of those things. But I'm of the mind that the number of home runs that we have seen has decreased the home run excitement that we used to have growing up. I think that
they're not
as they're not the premium of them is not as there. The idea of a guy hitting, and you made the point, the fact that Ketel Marte had 20 home runs or whatever it was at the All-Star break just absolutely blows my mind. And so, you know, Pete Alonso had 30 at the break, and I was having this conversation with Bo Porter in our studio. Daryl Strawberry's record of, you know, rookie Mets home runs is going to be absolutely destroyed by Pete Alonso, who's a very good hitter and who won the home run derby and excels at hitting the ball out of the ballpark. But the idea that a home run holds this great excitement, we see so many of them now that I don't feel that that's necessarily the case. They help teams win games, certainly, and you want to hit more of them than the other guys. But I do not feel at this point in the game of baseball that a home run is that exciting of a play.
Perfectly valid point, Dan. And it's watered down. And I absolutely do agree with that because there's going to be more of them than there have ever been in history. So you can't have the same excitement that you did in, you know, 1985 when Jim Rice was doing it, or Mark McGwire's rookie year, that magical 50 home run run. You're right. You can't have the same excitement. I guess my point was, and I was arguing with our good friend Barry Sferluga of the Washington Post, who's, you know, forgotten more about baseball this morning than I'll probably ever know in my life, but the idea that we're now categorizing the home run as a non-exciting play because it's less exciting is something I'm not willing to buy. I understand your point, and again, I would agree with everything by and large that you're saying, but I still categorize if it's a binary one or zero. I still put home run on the good side. Would I prefer more, you know, doubles in the gap and letting Trey Turner run, you know, like a deer downhill? Of course I would. I want all those things. I want stolen bases. I want the variety that I grew up with. There's a million ways to skin a cat. There are, you know, there were offenses that did nothing but put the ball in play and were based on speed. There were power offenses, and there was everything in between. You know, there was always a million ways to do it. That's part of what made this game so wonderful and so appealing to me as a kid and adult now, you know, having grown up in it. But if we're saying because home runs are less exciting, therefore they're not exciting at all, I just don't buy it. Now, if your complaint is, hey, because they're less exciting, we got to do something about that, I get that. The same way maybe in the NFL that, hey, there's too many touchdowns, too many passing touchdowns, we got to make them at a premium again. I don't know that, you know, league executives and fantasy players would agree with you, but I do see the point. But to me, to make the next leap of, hey, it's gone from such a wonderful, rare occurrence to, yeah, now, you know, small second basemen that are 5'9", 165 are going to hit 40. It's not as exciting. I get that. But saying it's not exciting at all, again, I'll take a home run over, you know, walks and, you know, strikeouts where guys can't catch up to the nastiest slider you've ever seen to go with a 98 mile an hour fastball time after time, you know?
Certainly agree with you. I do want to ask you one Nats question, but I'll just make this final point before we wrap up this conversation. We can have it more, you know, at some point later on in the season. I think this is all good stuff. But the number to me that I saw over the All-Star break was that the three true outcomes, for those who might not be aware, home run, strikeout, and walk, three plays that a defense cannot make an impact on, are at about 40% in today's game. And so the idea that defenders are not put into action, that base running is not valued in 40% of results, offensive results in today's game, is just entirely too high to me. And it's a concept that I think Major League Baseball is going to need to do a lot of thinking about, and I'm sure they are. These are very smart people that analyze this game on a level that we cannot even fathom, but I just really cannot wrap my head around the number that nearly 40% of offensive action, so to speak, in this game cannot be impacted by a defense or by base running. And I'd love to continue this conversation with you another time, Danny. I do want to ask you one question about the Nationals. And you, on a near daily basis, along with your pal Grant Paulson, have an opportunity to interact with the fan base, maybe in a way that I do not, about this year's Nationals team. There was obviously much frustration and consternation when the Nationals were struggling. Do you get a sense, either internally from yourself or from the Nationals fan base, that people are buying into this year's Nationals as what we thought they were before the season started, which is a World Series contender, a team that can and maybe should win the National League East this year?
It's such a new thing, man. I mean, think of this. This is we've been doing this for a while, right? I've been on the radio for 10 years in D.C., and the Nationals are – but this team is still young, not in terms of personnel, but in terms of its institutionalization into kind of the fabric of the D.C. sports market, right? We've done the Redskins for 80 years. We've done hockey for 50 years. The basketball team has been around for that long. Baseball's still pretty new. Think about this. They've never done this. Every division that they've won, they've gotten off to an early lead, and everybody else folded like a cheap suit. This is the first time that they got off to that rotten start and have made a comeback. I mean, think of previous years where, you know, it didn't go according to plan. And by the way, it's a privilege to be disappointed, quote-unquote, in an 86-win season. I never thought I'd see that day as a baseball fan in this area. So, with good clubs comes good expectations, but I digress. The fact that there's a chase on now where the Nationals are the hunter, and I think folks are actually legitimately excited about that possibility, Dan, because, again, they've never done this before. And in other markets, maybe it's more commonplace than what they've been playing for 100 years, but they haven't here. And I think fans are kind of into that, sort of the race against the clock, digging out of the hole that the Nationals dug themselves for those first 50 games. But, with plenty of chances against the Braves coming up, this was a huge month for this club, how they fare and really these 17 of the next 19 games before the month ends against really good teams like the Braves, Philly, who they're right there with, Colorado, and the Dodgers, of course, maybe the best team in all of baseball with a little Mississippi two-piece against the Orioles mixed in there. But what they do this month will kind of determine, I think, an awful lot about the rest of the year, and people are excited. So buying in, yeah, to some degree, maybe not the optimism of spring training, but intrigued and energized and fascinated, I think so.
It's awesome. I'm fascinated by it, and I know you are as well, and I can't wait to see what's going to happen with this team this season. Danny Ruelle, co-host of Grant and Danny, every weekday on 106.7 The Fan between 10 and 2. Danny, thanks so much for the time, man, and look forward to seeing you sometime soon.
Sounds good. Real pleasure, my friend. Thanks for having me on.
You bet. Nationals baseball is always live with MLB at Bat. Follow the action with game tracking and video highlights, along with up-to-the-moment stats, standings, breaking news, and more. Download MLB At Bat today. It's your number one app for Nationals baseball. Game two of this three-game series between the Phillies and Nationals this evening. It'll be a 7 o'clock game on Fox. We will not have it for you on Masson, but you can hear the game right here on 106.7 The Fan. Patrick Corbin will take the mound for the Nationals. Aaron Nola for the Phillies. Good pitching matchup tonight. Up in Philadelphia, Nationals will try and win their fifth straight series. Thanks to my buddy Matt Galb, covers the Phillies. Thanks to Danny Ruelle, who you can hear every weekday right here on 106.7 between 10 and 2 with Grant Paulson. Have a great weekend, everybody. Thanks for listening to Nats Insider. Talk to you next Saturday.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.